Radio.
Golden dreamy beauty man, is it only fantasy? Sometimes one can't help but wonder, will it ever truly be? Some people keep on saying, all is illusion and lies. Why is it so hard to believe there are better days to see? So it seems like the world is tumbling down. It's the darkest time of night, right before dawn. Here comes
greetings and blessings, blessings and greetings, blessed souls. We're alive because we've been blessed to stay alive. In Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You're now tuned into blogtalkradio.com. The inner frequency of blogtalkradio.com, we humbly suggest, is Soul Class. This is Soul Class 520, Secular by Design Program Presentation number 47. Baruch Hashem, blessed is our Creator, shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the human family experience. With the Creator's help, our next broadcast will take place right now, October 20th, 2015, beginning, well, it's now 9:32 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA. Unifying Souls, actually, corresponding to the 7th of Marcheshvan, 5,776 years ago, since our common ancestors, Adam and Eve, walked and stewarded upon this earth. Program content will focus on reading from Alan W. Cecil's seminal work, Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances, which can be purchased by just Googling up Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances by Alan W. Cecil. That's C-E-C-I-L-S. Our call-in number to listen if you want to participate with some verbal dialogue between myself and our co-host, our other co-host, and I'll introduce him in one moment, is 347-838-8669. That's 347-838-8669. And to give you an idea of what we are envisioning for the future in our dialogue is about the divine creator, the divine image, Torah, Bible class, universal redemption, Alan W. Cecil, Secular by Design, A Philosophy of No Eyeballs and Observances, and the seven universal commandments. But before we get back to the show or start the program, we're going to have to turn on this wonderful music by Brother Spirit and Soul, prayer partner, Isaac Batone. This is from his Generation Redemption album. Here comes the time. Let's just turn on the music. Get out of the shoe. Sorry, Rabbi Isaac. And by the way, if you want to have some real authentic Jewish Moroccan prayer liturgy to hear and revel in, you can come to you're most openly welcome to come to 1433 President Street in the Crown Heights section of Brooklyn, New York. 1433 President Street is located between Albany Avenue and Kingston Avenue under the spiritual leadership of Rabbi Daniel Mapur. And joining me live right now is Rambam, student and teacher and disseminator of the teachings of the Nesher Gold of the Great Eagle, Rambam, Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, Maimonides, Dennis Ryan. Good morning, sir.
Boker Tov, Don.
Boker Tov. It's been a long time since we've collaborated, Dennis, and hopefully we'll have a fruitful collaboration. As we stand right now at 9:34, I don't think Alan's joining us today, but before we go further into the program, I want to make an invitation to everyone who's out there, and also as well to you, Dennis. There's going to be a special event taking place at the United Nations on November 9th. And it will be taking place between 4 and 7 p.m. in the late afternoon, early evening. And you can attend. The admission is for free. You merely have to RSVP at info, I-N-F-O, at noahide.org, and therefore you'll be allowed to attend this session, which will be focusing on the integration of the seven Noahide commandments into the mindset of the blessed nations of the world. With one of the things that's inspiring this conference, as hopefully will further inspire, not just for theological or secular humanist reasons, but actually to try to integrate the prophecy of Isaiah chapter 2, verse 4, where we'll see the transformation of spears into plowsheds and swords into prune hooks. So Dennis, I just want to let you know that this is something that you yourself, I know you live in the New York City area, and the United Nations is located at 7, let me just pull up that address, please be with me. That's 777 United Nations Plaza, New York, New York, and you enter at on 44th Street and 1st Avenue, and this gathering is called Harnessing Cultural and Religious Ethics to Promote the UN Post-2015 Developmental Goals. So, Dennis, I hope you'll be able to come, and I hope to be there. I've already RSVP'd myself, so those of us who are listening on the radio, here's a chance to meet Dennis, myself, Rabbi Yaakov David Cohen. We had a show yesterday. Hopefully we'll do a show the morning of this grand event, and all of us in the spirit of trying to get people together to get on board and have some real, tangible, and deep and very significant dialogue. Dennis, any take on these matters?
Yes, well, I got to applaud the effort of starting at the UN trying to get some universal ideas accepted that have been with mankind for such a long time, and to be able to have people put their weapons away for that they use for anger and for differences and have a common goal for peace. Very, very important. But we need more people to be doing this. And the rabbi I listened to yesterday did a pretty good job.
Thank you, Dennis. And again, my extending, he invited everyone, so therefore I'm picking up the baton and carrying it, and of course the invitation goes to you and to your wife, and if any of your children are available to come, and hopefully we can drink a l'chaim together at this gathering, if you're able to come on the November 9th.
I'll try.
Okay. With that being said, let's now go into the heart of the matter of today's program presentation. Chapter 2 of Allen's Secular by Design, a Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances. He quoted from What is History by Edward Hallett, which was printed in 1961 in New York City by Vintage Books, page 9. It used to be said that facts speak for themselves. This, of course, is untrue. The facts speak only when the historian calls on them. It is he who decides to which facts to give the floor and in what order or context. It is the historian who has decided for his own reasons that Caesar's crossing of that petty stream, the Rubicon, is a fact of history, whereas the crossing of the Rubicon by millions of other people before or since is of no interest to anyone else. So, Dennis, any comment on this brief quote from that Alan plucked out from Edward Hallett Carr?
Well, what happens is most people don't understand the deep historical impact the crossing of the Rubicon was, because that was an area that was considered that Roman soldiers, would never come on to Roman property per se. They had to stay away from the proper area of the Roman area, because that was for the Roman people and citizens, and they didn't want any military ideas there, because the military impact was pointed away from the Roman property in Italy. So if an emperor or any general decide to bring the army back into proper Roman territory, he would have had to cross the Rubicon. So that was the borderline between what was considered a place for people, citizens, and it separated it from the threat of an army. So it was very important. Now, the other part that you mentioned is very important to me, Dawn, and that is facts. We have people that have facts through the wazoo from here to kingdom come. But right. unless you can accept the Bible as having the real true facts, you are making it up from a human viewpoint, because there's a difference between human facts and spiritual facts. Spiritual facts come from the Bible because it was centered on a spiritual concept, and that is that we are responsible through God for ourselves and the planet we live on. So the Bible is really the gold standard. Now, if you think that you can come up with a series of facts that are pro or con, and the facts are going to change your mind because of the details, when in effect the whole macro idea has to be investigated and understood. The rabbi yesterday said, education, education, education. I'd just yes. like to modify that a little bit to education, education, and understanding. If you cannot accept some understanding that's in the Bible, then we are wasting our time educating you. Because if you can't accept some of the basic golden standards that are set for humanity, how are you going to go off based on a little fact somewhere and build a whole new world around the facts? The facts are nice, but unless you can understand our purpose here and what was done a long, long time ago, you are bound to repeat it or search for it and never find it.
Beautiful said, Dennis. I just want to mention, when you mentioned the idea of spiritual, I'm reminded of the word design, which is part of the title of this book, Secular by Design, A Philosophy of No Ideas and Observances. When I think of spirituality, I think of the intent of the design, meaning the spirituality which is existing in the Torah, which is really accessible to human beings by virtue of the fact, by a fact, which is document in the Torah, the Bible, several times known as the divine image, which was uniquely given to human beings. An animal does not have a divine image. A blade of grass does not, a drop of water. They all have a divine design to them, but the divine image is that we should go in the attributes of Creator. We don't expect a blade of grass to emulate the attributes of mercy or kindness or strict justice. We do see, like in certain types of animal species, it seems to be their predominant behavior is of judgment, meaning the predatory type of animals. But again, that is their nature that the Creator has given them, as opposed to a human being is known as a Baal Shinai. We are capable of massive change. So for that person who has been engaging in some level of Bible Torah study, but does not want to try to understand it according to its original context, there is room for us to make a change in our thinking towards that person, that we hope that they will begin to understand that this is a type of wisdom which was simplified down to the very puny microcosmic human mind, in order that the microcosmic puny human mind can access a little taste of that spirituality, of that legal implication, of that sense of personal implementation. But as we go now into page 93, getting into the meat of this page of 93, Allen writes the following. In our westernized culture, the version of history that is commonly taught can be summed as follows. For most of his existence, man dwelt in caves, living on nuts and berries along with the wild game he could catch. After thousands of hard scrabble existence, scrawling pictures of buffalo, deer, and bears on cave walls, when he was not out hunting and gathering food, man finally learned how to farm, and then to write, and to build houses and form towns and communities. There were fights between towns, and many little kingships sprung up, and these kingships warred on other kingships. A few of the towns became cities, and a few of these cities became powerful city-states. They built ziggurats and pyramids before being overthrown and seeing their city destroyed and their people led off into slavery by more powerful city-states, who would themselves be overthrown in the span of time. This state of affairs went on for a long time. Then about 2,500 years ago, in a little country called Greece, the people of a city named Athens invented philosophy, democracy, and science, and they taught it to the people of Rome. The Romans added to the Greek teachings by establishing a complex civil law. as well as the impressive engineering feats such as public roads, viaducts, and sporting arenas. In the far eastern part of the Roman Empire, a man called Jesus invented Christianity, which quickly became the religion of the Greeks and Romans, and the Greeks and the Romans spread their knowledge and religion far and wide, from Africa and Persia to the British Isles. Then the Western Europeans, who were much wiser than anyone else, invented marvelous things such as oil paintings, symphonies, telescopes, printing presses, guns, and best of all, sailing ships that could navigate the coast of the ocean. With these ships, they sailed out from their ports to enlighten the backward savages and barbarians that inhabited much of the world and brought back the tribute given to them by the barbarians. This is how democracy, capitalism, and Christianity spread throughout the lands, and why the Western Europeans became the rulers of the earth. Now, of course, those of us who have done a little studying of history realize it's a little more complex, and there's a little more broadness to the presentation of the original beginning of the human family experience, as I like to say. But again, going through the prism of Western culture, one can understand that if you were to read this to many people, say, yeah, that's how things happen. But we know, for those of us in the Torah community and those who study history, that this is itself. I'd just like to back off one assertion, as one person would perhaps perceive this is the way things started, that man finally learned how to farm, which is diametrically opposite of what we see at the beginning of the Bible. We see that Adam and Eve were planted in a garden, and they were told what they could eat. In the beginning, they did not have difficulty eating. The difficulty came when they ate from a tree that they ate too prematurely. So Dennis, any take on this, and I'm sure you, at some level you would agree, that many people would buy into that following the scenario that I read in Alan's book, where in fact it's a little bit, and also with the assertion that some people would think that Jesus invented Christianity. He himself, I mean, again, I'm not a Christian, but he didn't invent Christianity. That's something that was invented by others.
It isn't a question of inventing Christianity. It is recognized, it should be recognized from where it emanated from. It emanated from the Bible and the scriptures. Because when Jesus was on the planet, he quoted the sages and scriptures. He wasn't quoting Catholicism or any concept like that. He was only bringing up what was already established, what was written. There was a word of God existing prior to Jesus of Nazareth. He didn't dispute that. He went along what existed. But people like to think that this was a revelation, when in effect, he didn't talk of anything new. Everything he mentioned is in the Bible. Everything he believed in is in the Bible. Everything he spoke was related to the Bible. He did not invent, but he only tried to emphasize what people already had in their environments, in the scriptures that were written. So we're always trying to wake up people to realize where we came from. That's why sometimes people will say, oh, the Jews are very barbaric in the way they go about it. Yet, do people realize that we all came from cavemen? Cavemen! So, if you want to call Jews barbaric, call our beginnings of humanity where we came from caves. We lived in caves. We didn't have language. We had sounds. We grunted. We were better off than the animals, but it took us a long time to establish that difference. And when Alan's book mentions a whole period of time that's sort of condensed in a couple of sentences, he's talking about where have we come from and where are we now. So we got to appreciate the passing of time as it relates to humans. We are not the fastest developers in the world, but after a while we will figure things out. But the one thing that behooves most people is how come the scriptures and the Bible that was written a long time ago are not in the forefront of our minds. When Alan talks about Western civilization, he's talking about people who basically leapfrogged over scripture and the Bible and decided their way is the better way. And that's why You said, and you quoted, that history has meaning depending on who's interpreting it. So if you want to invent interpretations, well, you can delve into history and come out with all sorts of theories, et cetera, and try to back them up with facts, your interpretation of the facts. But the true facts are still in the Bible, and no one has ever said they were wrong. And the Bible hasn't been broken, so why try to replace it or leap over it?
True. As we go further now on page 94, because we started on page 93 and it spilled over to page 94, Alan reviews his synopsis of that of history as follows. This was a presentation of the synopsis of history that has been taught in our educational system for generations, and it is an approximation of how Western culture looks at mankind's journey from cave dwellers to modern civilized society. As far as factual history, it is essentially correct, albeit from a Western European point of view, to call ancient and advanced civilizations such as the Cynic or the Aztec barbaric is a symptom of Eurocentric subjectivity. There was evidence that other civilizations had found America long before Columbus, although, by the way, Columbus never discovered America. He discovered islands in the area, which I guess you would call the Caribbean. So, and those who were given credence to discovering America beforehand, the North Americas, South America, well, North America, I should say, as the Vikings or the Chinese and perhaps even the Irish, but these events lack physical evidence and written histories, or else what has been written has been ignored by scholars. Of course, there's a fine line between the difference between history and propaganda, and most histories were self-centered and self-serving. Certainly, nations of antiquity can be excused, for before man learned how to safely navigate ships across seas and oceans, traveling to distant lands was a long and arduous task. And to someone who lived in Western Europe long ago, the rumors of lands such as China or Japan were tales which bordered on the mythological. This was one of the main criticisms about the Bible, particularly the early books of the Old Testament, that the biblical narrative was not historically accurate, having been written before the development of modern, and then Alan put in parentheses, read Greek, meaning modernity or the modern era is from Greek, the beginning of Greek history. What is actually is history? Is it a story told from a particular point of view? Is it a bare assemblage of facts? Or is it a mixture of both? A story told from a specific point of view, using such facts as this historian wishes to convey. Is history an objective science, or is history influenced by the historian's religion and politics, no matter how hard the historian tries to be objective? Who invented, quote-unquote, modern historical methods, and how are they applied? Any take on that, Dennis?
Yes, what happens is we humans, being imperfect, come up with what we call faddism. And that is, this is the latest fad. Is it chic to do this? Is it wise to do that? Will you look extra good coming out with a different idea on a new twist on an old theme? We like to do that because we think we're pretty clever and creative. Our egos go forward. However, it all emanated from what is called history, but everybody who tries to explain history is taking a viewpoint. The Bible was established as a gold standard. If you can't compare what you do, what deed you do, to the Bible, then you are inventing your own structure. You are inventing in your mind what is good and bad, when in effect it was already predefined a long, long time ago in Scripture and the Bible. So if you think that if you can follow history, that you're going to find a clear explanation as to what happened over a long period of time, no, because humans like fads. It'll last maybe a decade, switch over to another one, and we just keep on going and going and going. So you cannot come out with a fad unless you can present it to the environment you live in as this is something really to go with. It is something good. It's better than what was previous in history. So we keep going from fad to fad. And to me, all the fads add up to a circle. Depending on what fad you're in, that's what part of the circle. but the center of the circle, the Bible or the gold standard, hasn't changed. But humans will continue to dance around and dance around and think that they are creating hope, but it's really false hope because you haven't created anything better than the gold standard or the Bible.
Beautiful. Dennis, believe it or not, we've come to the end of today's program presentation. I just want to remind everyone that, again, you have a golden opportunity, blessed souls, if you'll be in New York City on November 9th. You can RSVP for free, F-R-E-E, by sending an email to info, I-N-F-O, at Noahide, N-O-A-H-I-D-E.org. That's info, I-N-F-O, at N, capital N-O-H-I-D-E.org. The United Nations gathering will be taking place at the summit, or I'm sorry, at the UN headquarters, which is located at 777 United Nations Plaza, New York, New York. You should enter on 44th Street and First Avenue. And again, the conference, the gathering, the summit, I guess it's being called, will be Harnessing Culture and Religious Ethics to Promote the UN Post-2015 Environmental Goals. People coming together, people like Dennis Ryan, people like myself, people like Rabbi Yaakov David Cohen, and you too, blessed souls, if you're in the New York City area. And it's something that I think you really want to take advantage of, and if you have the opportunity to be in New York City that day. With that being said, Dennis, would you like to make any concluding statements before we segue out with our program ending music by David Dom? And again, I thank you for taking one of your most valuable resources, your precious time, to spend the last half hour with me.
Yes, I think people should reflect on where they came from. And it's not necessarily your mother and your grandmother and your great-grandmother. There's a whole bunch of other people that are behind you, and they have tried to follow the path to heaven. And by doing that, they use the gold standard or the Bible, because no one has come up with anything better. So therefore, if you can't accept some of those ideas, then you're going to be wandering or searching.
Thank you, Dennis. And now we're going to conclude with today's segue ending music of David Dom, who will help us get back home to help us realize our divine image is something we go out and scrimmage with. Our Telem Elohim is no dream. And bless us all. I'm going to leave you with one last point to make and share with you from my heart to your heart. You've got to do good. And even though that might generate some anxiety and ambivalence and a whole ray of emotions, span of emotions, wider than the equator. Atevatov lehitiv, it is the nature of the good to do good. The Creator, who is the source of good, because He gave us this life, empowers us through our divine image and all of our intellectual and spiritual and emotional capabilities to do what's right. So let's now go out and make it a better day for the world, for ourselves, for our family. And with that being said, let's go right into Travis's song by David Dom. Take care, everyone.
Pray the Lord will take me there. if the one you're finding too hard to see. A vision of hope and a vision of peace coming from the holiness that's within me. I'm just a man and a prayer. I pray the Lord will take me there to follow the yearnings of my soul, returning with a heart that's whole. When my soul is in flight, I can see the banner of my life becomes unfurled. As I take my step to the glorious light, no longer caught will I be between two worlds. Just a man and a prayer. I pray the Lord will take me there, yeah, to follow the yearning of my soul, returning with a heart that